to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Saturday evening, April 24th, 2010, last week of the month of April, last week of Confederate History Month. We are going to get to Confederate History Month, our coverage of it, our farewell to it. During tonight's third hour, we had originally intended to use the bulk of tonight's program to cover Southern-related issues, but due to a breaking news story on Thursday, which we will be covering for the bulk of this hour, we have decided to shift gears slightly so we could work this in. But first of all, welcome back to the show. James Edwards here with you. Bill Rowland now joining me, and I'm going to bring Bill on in just a second as we come to you live from AM 1380. WLRM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, going out live also to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network. You can catch us online, either live or in archived form, if you miss the live shows at thepoliticalcesspool.org and libertynewsradio.com. Big week for the political cesspool, as we mentioned at the top of the show. We were quoted in the Louisville Courier-Journal. They quoted my commentary on Michael Steele. That paper, of course, services the Louisville, Kentucky, Southern Indiana metropolitan area. A big tip of the hat to Jeff Rentz for helping us break an all-time political cesspool record for traffic in a day. That also happened this week. And thanks, of course, to Keith Alexander, who hosted with me for the first hour as we covered a plethora of topics, including the great new immigration law that was passed in Arizona. That was a bit of good news. Then we went to the bad news. Apparently having a grocery store in a black area is now a civil rights. We covered the tea parties and a little bit more, all that in the first hour. Tonight, though, second hour, which we're in now, we're going to be talking about the death of Richard Barrett. And Bill Rowland and I have been talking about this story since it happened on Thursday. And since then, some more elements have come to light. So we are going to take this story piece by piece, and we think it's a story with so many different angles to it that it deserves comprehensive coverage on this show. We may spend the bulk of this hour discussing it. Bill Rowland, are you ready?
I'm ready, James, and it's great to be on the show again. Thanks for having me on as a guest host. I always appreciate being on the show and doing the best we can to entertain, enlighten, and educate our audience. Right to it about the Richard Barrett case.
Yeah, sometimes it's more fun to be on the show than others. Of course, Bill, you've been a permanent co-host on this show since our very inception back in October of 04, and we've had a lot of good times together. Unfortunately, tonight's topic, until we get to the third hour where we do our Confederate segment, is going to be rather unpleasant. Let's, as I said, take it piece by piece. Richard Barrett was a graduate of Rutgers University. He obtained his law degree from the University of Memphis. He was an attorney who practiced in Jackson, Mississippi, and he once argued and won a landmark First Amendment case before the United States Supreme Court. Richard Barrett was found brutally murdered in his home on Thursday morning after being beaten, repeatedly stabbed in the neck, and set on fire. Police are holding a 22-year-old black male in custody as the primary suspect in the ongoing investigation. Of course, this black male who had served 6 years in prison already for assaulting a police officer, was a member of a street gang, and he has since given a full confession. There's no doubt about it. He's the one who did it. Now, where to start? First of all, this black male that committed the murder, Richard Barrett was paying him to mow his lawn. So white supremacist, Richard Barrett, that we always have read he was a white supremacist, was paying this black male to mow his lawn. So, first of all, to continue to attack the character and reputation of a man who was so appallingly savage shows the pure hatred of those who work for the so-called mainstream media. For any faults that Barrett might have had, he has suffered enough. And the first thing you read in any of the stories over the past couple of days about Barrett's death was that he was a white supremacist. Well, of course, that's just the opinion of the writer, but readers are led to believe that the story should be about Barrett's politics rather than the fact that he died a heinous and gruesome death at the hands of a black ex-convict that he employed to mow his lawn. And Bill, as you said, isn't that what liberals tell us that we're supposed to do? Aren't we supposed to reach out and help the poor, downtrodden, misunderstood minorities who are victims of the racist American justice system? Shouldn't we give them another chance? Well, this so-called white supremacist who chose to live in an integrated neighborhood, who chose to let a black man work for him for money, was rewarded by his efforts by having to suffer a horrible death. Now, I wonder if Mark Potok and the race hustlers at the Southern Poverty Law Center have black ex-cons doing their yard work. And could you imagine, Bill, how the stories would have read had a white man so viciously murdered a black or homosexual? I doubt the victim's character would come into question in that case, while the alleged murderer would rightly be the focal point of the articles. Well, the USA Today, this was front page news in the USA Today yesterday, said that Barrett was a white supremacist because he campaigned against communism and supported the Confederate flag. And as I often say, any white conservative to the right of Stalin is now considered a white supremacist. But that's not the point. The point is, Bill, that Richard Barrett has become the latest victim of rampant black-on-white crime. That is what the point is. But let's just pause right there and give you an opportunity to jump in before we go on to some of the latest breaking news of the story. What do you make of all this?
Of course, Richard Barrett is characterized as a white supremacist, and that characterization is, or label, is demonstrably false. What he should be called is a white civil rights activist. A white supremacist would obviously indicate that he had some sort of following or that he advocated using group action against minorities. Well, in every case in Richard Barrett's life, he was, I guess, what we call a lone ranger. Now, I want to make it clear that Richard Barrett was not connected with any group that the SPLC lists among its hate groups and among its enemies, really, the people that they smear to draw in donations. But Richard Barrett had a group called the Nationalist Organization, or he had his own little group, which had virtually no members except for Richard Barrett. But Richard Barrett did effectively campaign for white civil rights in Forsyth County in Georgia back in the 90s, and in other cases involving the Confederate flag displays at Ole Miss, and other such cases that really promoted equal rights for whites. So he could very rightly and correctly be called a white civil rights advocate or white civil rights activist. Now, let's make it clear again that he was not connected with any major white organization. Let's call it that. Any major white organization, either mainstream or radical. Nothing was ever said about him or against him that he was involved in any kind of organization that promoted violence, that promoted insurrection, that promoted overthrowing the government of the United States. He's never been connected to any of those. Now, let's look at, this is the view of the man. He lived alone. He had no real family. He had no close friends. He was isolated in the sense of being a man out on his own. And so there's no real way to paint him as involved in links and ties and conspiracies with any other group, even if he wasn't a member. So that's the clear picture of Richard Barrett, I think, that is accurate, and I think you would agree, James. But look at the crime, and the essentials of this crime are that, exactly as you said, Richard Barrett was murdered because of black criminality. Not even the newspapers or the media portray or indicate that this murder was conducted as a race hate crime. But we're going to get into the hate crime element in a minute. The fact is that Richard Barrett, as you said, was paying a black ex-convict to work on his lawn. Now, there was another aspect of this crime is that more than just this ex-con were involved in Barrett's death. So the original report that Barrett had somehow cheated or not paid this black ex-convict enough money for the yard work, and the ex-convict then came to his house, and they argued, and, Barrett was killed in the ensuing argument. That's false because we know that other suspects are involved in the crime. Now, breaking it down, obviously, this black ex-convict, and I think some of his in-laws or some of his relatives or friends, close friends, took Barrett as an easy mark, as a possibly wealthy white man or white man with some money, living alone, no witnesses, nobody else in the house. They went there and conducted a home invasion and killed him, looking for money. That's what, I think if we break it down, is what really happened. But what's interesting, and do we have time before the break to get into this, James?
No, Bill, we're about to go to break as we stand, so we're going to pause it right there, and we're going to come back. Much more to come. It's going to be an exhaustive and comprehensive coverage this hour of the murder of Richard Barrett. We're trying to give you an idea of who he was and what some of the preliminary stories on this killing had to read, and so much more to come. We want you to stay tuned. We're going to draw some very interesting conclusions. Stay tuned. James and Bill back right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Welcome back. To get on the Political Cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, hard to be excited about this segment because we don't take, unlike the left, I should say, we don't take joy in the brutal murder of anyone. And we are here now to talk about the very vicious killing of Richard Barrett. We gave you a little background information on some of the major stories we've picked up on from the Jackson Courier Ledger that services the Jackson, Mississippi area where Richard Barrett lived, to the USA Today. I also want to tell you that I met Richard Barrett once in 2003. He invited me to give a keynote speech to his annual Spirit of America Day Award Ceremony. Now, this was an annual showcase that Barrett hosted that honored outstanding high school student athletes in Mississippi. It was an event that was recognized by proclamation annually of the Mississippi State Legislature. He invited me down. We never worked together on any projects, and I suppose we could have been characterized as loose acquaintances rather than friends, but he did invite me down on this one occasion, and He was generally pleasant in my dealings with him. The people that he had there, the families of the young student athletes, the academic scholars, were of the highest order. And I know a lot of people on the right don't share a favorable opinion of Richard Barrett, and certainly a lot of people on the left don't either. But no one deserves to die the way that he died. He had his faults, or so I read, and there are many actions he took that I know about or having read about, which I wouldn't have wanted to be associated with, but nefarious or not, no one deserves to die like he did and then have their name dragged through the mud by a bunch of self-righteous charlatans. And if nobody else is going to step up and say what needs to be said about this issue, then we will, like always. And he has our sympathies, and I pray that Richard Barrett can find the peace and death that was not afforded to him in life. I have gone, Bill, on a lot of these websites that have posted articles about this story, and I have been appalled. I've been absolutely shocked by the hatred that is emanating from the left in response to the death of Richard Barrett. I cannot tell you how many comments I've read on these news sites. People celebrating the fact that he died that way, saying, you know, that was karma. Who was really going to miss an evil white supremacist? He deserved to die. If only all of them could die like that. No one's going to miss Richard Barrett. You know, he got what he deserved. So on and so forth, ad infinitum. I tell you, Bill, never. You know, we get a bad rap from the lying left-wing media about what fills our heart, when in fact love fills our hearts. That's why we do this program, because we love our family, we love our people. Never would we ever say, you know, thank God he died, I hope he suffered. And I've read that so many times. Medgar Evers' brother himself said that Richard Barrett had told him one-on-one that he doesn't hate anyone. He doesn't hate black people. He just doesn't like mixing. 100 million Americans would agree with that today. And, Bill, you have come up with an interesting observation also about how the media is doing everything they can to ensure that Richard Barrett doesn't become some sort of martyr, and I'd like to ask you to pontificate on that.
The media coverage of the death of Richard Barrett, I think, clearly indicates that that the media was hoping, I believe, or was keeping a watch on this case, hoping that it was not a black man who or a group of blacks who had killed him. They were certainly hoping that somehow, I guess, his death was accidental, or they sort of dragged their feet on investigating and actually finding out the facts and the details on this case. Because the last thing the media wants is a bona fide martyr for white rights and for white people.
I think what they were expecting, that he was murdered by a rival, quote-unquote, white supremacist, is what their initial thinking was, which is why they went so buck wild on reporting the story.
That's perhaps true, but I think they suspected all along that this was not a crime of rivalry or anything like that. I think that they must have known that it was probably ordinary criminal behavior on the part of blacks or on the part of somebody. And they were desperate that it should not be a black perpetrator, but of course it turned out to be a black perpetrator. And so the next thing is to downplay any racial animus or any racial motive in the crime, which actually didn't exist. But, you know, there have been details that have emerged about Richard Barrett's death, or at least claims and accusations from the confessed killer. From Richard Barrett's murder, and let's remember, he did confess to the crime, and he has implicated others. This is not a hearsay. Richard Barrett's murderer is now claiming that he became enraged after Richard Barrett made sexual advances to him, that he had gone by Richard Barrett's house, that Richard Barrett had made sexual advances, and that in a wild rage, he murdered Barrett. Now, the obvious evidence in the crime would not indicate that. But let's say, and let's go with what this confession means. If Richard Barrett was indeed murdered in his own house for making sexual advances, doesn't this raise this case to a hate crime? Because if, in fact, this black murderer is saying that he killed Richard Barrett in a rage because of a sexual advance, doesn't that indicate that Richard Barrett was a homosexual and that he was murdered because of his sexual orientation? I mean, this is based on the claims of his killer. And if that's the case, what is the difference in the outcome of Richard Barrett's murder and Matthew Shepard's murder? Why is it that Matthew Shepard's murder led to a federal hate crime bill in this country? And based on his murder, we now have a federal hate crime law in place in the United States. Why isn't Richard Barrett's murder being treated as a hate crime?
Yeah, it's interesting, Bill. How in the world will the media ever deal with this? You've got two players here, a black thug and an alleged homosexual in the middle of a brutal murder case that is making national headlines. Who do they support? Because both of these people are apparently members of preferred minority groups. Is Richard Barrett now a hero? Is this murder now a hate crime? Because, as you mentioned, Matthew Shepard was murdered for simply making sexual advances, and we know how the media treated that story. Is it only a hate crime when straight white males murder a homosexual, or will this black murderer get the same treatment? And, Bill, you mentioned to me this morning in a phone call that with all the furor in Mississippi over the rights, so-called rights of this teenage lesbian being infringed upon in Itawamba County due to the fact that she couldn't attend a prom. What will happen now that an alleged homosexual has been murdered, apparently, as a result of his sexual orientation? Do you think Ellen DeGeneres is going to set up a scholarship fund in Barrett's name? Can we expect to one day be able to contribute to the Richard Barrett Foundation? The plot thickens, Bill. It's going to be very interesting to see how the media treats the new details of this horrific story. I predict a hypocritical double standard is going to be employed because of Richard Barrett's politics. What do you think?
I want to know why Eric Holder is ignoring this case. If indeed this allegation that Richard Barrett's killer has made, now remember, he's the last person to see Richard Barrett alive. So by the very words out of his mouth, he's saying that he killed Richard Barrett because of Richard Barrett's sexual orientation. And if that's the case, why isn't Eric Holder treating this as a hate crime? The Matthew Shepard bill that put hate crime laws at the federal level in this country was supposed to punish and pursue and prosecute this very kind of crime. Now, what's the difference between Matthew Shepard and Richard Barrett in this case? One, Matthew Shepard was in a bar, and he made sexual advances to some to a male he didn't know or barely knew, and as a result of pursuing, and they and the, and everyone involved in that case was drunk, and so because of the aggressive sexual advances he made towards another man, of course things escalated out of control. And
Bill, hold it right there, killing. Bill. Got to take a break. We're going to pick it up right there, I promise. Stay tuned, everybody. Much more to come.
Political Cesspool, guys. We'll be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, everybody. Continuing on with our extensive coverage of the murder of Richard Barrett and all of the ramifications it has and could have as the story continues to develop. Bill Rowland, why don't you recap what we've covered so far the first half hour of this second hour, and then continue on with the thoughts you had before that last commercial break.
All right, James. The thing is, here's Richard Barrett, as we said, a white civil rights activist portrayed in the media as a white supremacist, who was murdered in his own home by Vincent McGee, a black ex-convict who was in prison for assaulting a police officer. Richard Barrett had hired him to do some yard work, to mow his lawn, which is something, as you said earlier, that neither Mark Potok nor Heidi Beirich nor the Southern Poverty and Law Center would do. You know, I want to know who does – I want to know if they have hired ex-convicts, black ex-convicts, to mow their lawns or to do their yard work or do any sort of work for them. I can guarantee you the answer is no. They're too hypocritical to actually put into action what they claim to believe. But anyway – Richard Barrett, murdered in his own home, brutally murdered, stabbed, beaten, burned alive. And this black convict, obviously this was of criminal intent. This is more a reflection of black criminality than any sort of race crime. We admit to that. The important revelation or the important claim by Vincent McGee that led him to murder Richard Barrett is that Richard Barrett made sexual advances to him that enraged him to such a degree that he beat, stabbed, and burned Richard Barrett in Richard Barrett's own home. Now, my question once again to Eric Holder, to federal prosecutors in and around Mississippi, is why is this not being treated as a hate crime? Matthew Shepard, the homosexual for whom all the hate crime legislation was put into place, and is now law, was murdered in a remote area, in a rural area, after getting drunk in a bar with other people his age, and after apparently he had made such aggressive sexual advances that these people, first of all, not in their right minds because they were drunk, the situation escalated to violence, and Matthew Shepard was murdered. Now, there's no doubt about that, but the point is, why isn't Richard Barrett's murder even more heinous? Because Richard Barrett was murdered in his own home by someone he knew. Doesn't that make this even worse than Matthew Shepard's case, where perhaps you know, people not in control of their you know, don't have control of their emotions because of alcohol, go out of control and commit a murder, and Matthew Shepard himself being drunk? Yet here's a man sober, who's murdered in his own home for making the same sort of sexual advances Matthew Shepard made. Where is the federal prosecution in this case? Where is the federal hate crime prosecution? Eric Holder, if you're listening, or if anybody's listening from the federal authorities, from federal prosecutors, why isn't this case being pursued as a hate crime? You know, James, as well as I do, that will never happen, and the press is certainly not going to encourage that. They're going to hide under their under their desks rather than say, why isn't this being treated as a hate crime? Now, here's this pudgy little lesbian in Itawamba County. The ACLU, like rabid dogs, pursuing the Itawamba County School Board over her rights and over what she supposedly suffered for not being able to go to a prom. And yet Richard Barrett is lying cold in a morgue or about to go to his grave, and the ACLU is completely ignoring this case. They're prowling all over Mississippi looking for victims, and yet here's Richard Barrett dead, and they don't pursue this as a hate crime based on what his own killer has said. Now, this is a clear indication that these federal hate crimes laws are anti-white and that they will never be used in the pursuit of justice, but only for prosecuting and persecuting white people.
Well, you know, Bill, we asked Mark Potok of the Southern Poverty Law Center to come on the show tonight. And when I say we asked him to come on, we didn't call the SPLC directly and we didn't email him directly. What we did was we sent out an email to the subscribers of the Political Cesspools mailing list. And we know that the SPLC reads those in order to get fodder for their latest fundraising scam. So in that, we asked Mark Potok to join us on the show tonight to help us understand why leftists are so happy about this heinous murder and how we're to sort out the victimology pecking order that's getting pretty complicated here. So as you mentioned, Bill, we know that this so-called white supremacist being murdered is good by liberal standards. And if you don't think it is, just go to the Southern Poverty Law Center's blog and read all of the excited comments about his death, all of the people cheering on the murder and how he had it coming and how the world's a better place, that he was stabbed in the neck, repeatedly beaten and set on fire. We know that a black killing a white is therefore good, but now the black perpetrator accuses his victim of being a homosexual. So how does that alter the balance? I wish Mark Potok, who is such an expert on race relations and in bigotry and intolerance, I wish he would have accepted our invitation to come on tonight. I'm sure, Bill, he would have enlightened us. But I tell you, it is going to be – how do you think, Bill, this story will continue to play out over the next few days? Because, of course, any news story has a very short shelf life. And this one has probably exceeded the shelf life of most stories already, being that it has been front page news for 3 days, at least regionally, even though the USA Today did pick it up nationally. How much longer do you think it lasts, and where does it go from here now that all of this new information has come to light?
Certainly because the murderer has confessed to the crime. I think that the press will treat this as case closed. Justice will be served. Vincent McGee will go to prison for a long, long time. I don't think they will play Vincent McGee as a victim, but they're going to have a hard time with this as a crime of passion, because if it's a crime of passion and he murdered Richard Barrett because of homosexual advances, there's no way to escape the implication that this is a hate crime. And this is going to be a very, very difficult ladder for the media to climb, because the higher they go with it, the more danger they the more difficult to climb and the more dangerous it is for the media, because they'll have to at some point say, well, this wasn't a hate crime because, or it was a hate crime because. Well, we know that they are not going to ever bring this up as a hate crime, but how are they going to prevent the obvious implication that he was murdered because of sexual orientation? But this is what the killer has said. How are they going to get around that? And I think they're behind the eight ball on this, James. I really do. I think they just want this to go away. But because of this Itawamba County situation, homosexuality is smeared all over the map of Mississippi now, and that Mississippians are intolerant of homosexuality. But I think murder is more of an expression of intolerance than canceling a prom. I would certainly think so. And yet this intolerant murder of Richard Barrett is going to be downplayed in favor of a lesbian who couldn't go to a prom? How are they going to get out from under this? I don't know.
Well, I think, Bill, what they'll do is what they'll always do. They've never let hypocrisy or double standards get in the way of the way they operate before. I think what they are hoping is that, man, the pieces just don't add up here. We don't have the textbook example of hate. There's only one textbook example they like. If it's a white on black or a white on a homosexual crime, that's the only way it can ever be hate motivated. And since the pieces don't add up here to the way they like, they're just going to stop talking about it altogether and hope that the people forget it or that they don't draw the conclusions of these double standards. And that very well may be what happens. Other than this radio program, I've been, you know, perusing the internet today. I haven't seen one story anywhere that has been objective about the killing of Richard Barrett the way we have been objective this evening. Other than this radio program, every news story you read, he's a white supremacist. That's the focus of the story. And, oh, yeah, he was killed by a black that he went out of his way to employ. Now the black claims he was a homosexual. These are very small details of the stories that you read. What you read is really bad guy murdered, really bad guy murdered. That's the message. And now that, you know, now that it's a black doing it, now that, and who knows if Richard Barrett made sexual advances, who's to say? I mean, that could be completely bogus, but that is what the murderer is saying he did. And if that is, in fact, the case, you know, it certainly doesn't fit their plot line to have a black on homosexual murder. These are two protected classes now in American society. I think they're going to shut up. I think they're going to stop talking about it, and they just hope that nobody noticed what happened, and they can just go on to the next story. We'll see, but we're going to finish our coverage on the Richard Barrett murder right after this, when the Political Cesspool continues with James Edwards and Bill Rowland. Stay tuned, everybody.
We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, wrapping up our coverage of the murder of Richard Barrett, James Edwards and Bill Rowland back with you here on the Political Cesspool radio program. If you want to read our thoughts rather than just listening to them as you're doing on the radio this evening, go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Again, that web address is www.thepoliticalcesspool.org. I have posted three articles pertaining to this story with all the details that we've covered this hour. In fact, everything we cover on this radio show is backed up with sources and references on our blog. The blog complements the radio show, which is the anchor, of course, of our whole operation. But if you want to read more about Richard Barrett or any of the stories you hear this week or any week on the Political Cesspool, be sure to go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. And to wrap up the coverage of Richard Barrett's murder before we move into the third and final hour, which we will be using to serve as our farewell send-off to Confederate History Month 2010, I would like to share this with you. This is what we emailed out to our list today. It's a little commentary I wrote, and I'd like to share it with you. For those of you who aren't on our email list, you can join it by going to the website and putting in your email address. It automatically joins you. But liberalism, I wrote, exists because we can't be honest with ourselves. And if you're following the story of Richard Barrett with your thinking cap on, you'll see how this applies. White people get murdered by blacks every day, and it's hardly ever national news. But since Richard Barrett was a white supremacist, at least in the opinion of the mainstream media, we've got ourselves a national story here. Why? Because being a white supremacist justifies his murder, at least as far as the left is concerned. They won't come out openly and say it. They have to sugarcoat it, although they will allow their lackeys, those losers who are the keyboard commanders who post replies to these stories on the forums. They'll say, you know, the murder of Richard Barrett was not only justified, but was a great thing, a great day in America. But the people who author the articles won't. They leave it up to you to make that connection, because if you make the connection yourself, you'll hold on to it much more deeply. As I mentioned, the thing you were supposed to understand in reading any story about Richard Barrett this week was that a really bad guy was murdered. Now, you might say to yourself, even if I disagreed with Richard Barrett, no one deserves to be murdered for their thoughts or beliefs. To that, they would reply, oh, so you must be a really bad guy, too. Why else would you defend him? This is the classic liberal response. It doesn't have to be stated. It is clearly implied. Most of us will add a spoonful of sugar to make the medicine go down, then quietly rush off and put our minds to bed. Have you ever seen Morris Dees or Abe Foxman attacking Joseph Stalin or demonizing people for calling them communists? Of course not. Hitler was bad because he killed the Jews. Stalin killed way more people, but they were just white Christians, so it's no big deal. So what's the point of demonizing people in the first place? It's to set them up as justified candidates to be robbed and murdered. It doesn't happen overnight, but just like a slow and steady drip can erode a mountain, the leftist attack wears almost everyone down over time. That is, except people like us, people who are cut from a finer cloth. Abortion wasn't legalized or accepted overnight. Neither was gay marriage. Murdering white people who oppose any or all of these things is just another logical step in the process. What is the ultimate goal? And I ask you to figure that out. What is, Bill, the ultimate goal of all of these stories who are adding just a little more savagery to Richard Barrett, who we didn't know personally? I met him once, talked to him maybe a couple of times more than that over the course of 7 years. What is the media trying to drive home to them, Bill, to the readers of these stories, and what is your final thought on the murder of Richard Barrett?
The final thought I have on Richard Barrett is, first of all, as you said, reading the blogs or the comments on his death reveal more about the viciousness of liberals and leftists and their thoughts and their psychopathic attitudes that, of course, they cover with claims of being compassionate and wanting peace and multiculturalism and diversity and racial harmony. All of that is simply whipped cream that they put on top of their vicious, nasty, vulgar, hideous attitudes. It's false. Liberals, at their very core, are psychopaths. They are the worst haters in the world because they hate people who are trying to be reasonable about issues like race and the implications of the actions that liberals have put into motion. And I think deep down liberals know that their policies are failing, and so their natural reaction is just to become more fanatical about their failed beliefs. This is a typical liberal mindset. When it fails, become more fanatical about its success. Which is exactly the same attitude of the Bolsheviks of the previous century. From 1922 until 1953, the communists and Bolsheviks, if it failed, try it harder next time. You know, make it work through the death of millions and millions of people. And, of course, they ended up destroying their own country in the process. But what is the purpose of the liberal media, the liberal press, in reporting Richard Barrett's death and covering his death to any degree at all? You know, they could have just simply overlooked it. They could have simply pretended that Richard Barrett never existed. I think the purpose is to keep the fear on white people, to keep white people afraid of blacks, to make sure that white people never stand up for themselves, never speak out for themselves, never look after their own best interests, to always be afraid of blacks. This is really what the media does when they report on the death of people like Richard Barrett, or even report on crimes against white people like, you know, the white couple in Knoxville who were murdered by a gang of blacks, Shannon Christian and Newsom and Christian. But anyway, the point is, keep the public, the white public, afraid of blacks so that we never stand up for ourselves. It's schoolyard bullying on a mass scale. And the liberal media is very guilty of this. And we've got to learn that no matter what they say and no matter how they want to keep us down, we're not going to be kept down by their falsehood, their lies, and their exaggeration.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to read, as I said, more of our coverage on this and the other stories we cover tonight, go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. My final word on this, Bill, is that I last spoke with Richard Barrett. He was a featured guest on the Dr. Phil show, if you can believe it. And I happened to just at random, I think you and I, Bill, even talked that day about it. This was back in 2007, 2008, somewhere around there. I saw the Dr. Phil show. Richard Barrett was on there for a full hour. I called him up after he got back to Mississippi, and you know, told him that I had seen him, and, you know, he did a good job. And that was the last time I talked to him. But regardless of what Richard Barrett was or what he wasn't, I have to say, no one, again, deserved to go out that way. And to repeat myself, may he have the peace in death that he was never afforded in life. I think he got an unfair treatment from the media. Certainly, there were some things about his tactics that I would have wanted to keep at an arm's distance from us, which is why perhaps we never worked together in any serious relations. But, you know, Bill, one of the things that the media, some of the posters to some of these stories have been saying is that, you know, we can't allow him to become a martyr. Well, why shouldn't Richard be a candidate for martyrdom? I mean, what separates Richard Barrett from Edgar Evers? Truly, I mean, you know, when you break down all the politically correct bias that you read about the two, what separated them?
Only the fact that Richard Barrett was white and Medgar Evers was a manufactured black icon, which, of course, is all part of our civil rights deification process in this country, and that is that they can never be portrayed in anything but positive light. No matter how many crimes civil rights activists committed, no matter how many abominations you know, they perpetrated, no matter what harm they brought to white people and in this country or to this country in general, they will never, never, never allow a taint or a stain on the memory of Martin Luther King, Medgar Evers, Ralph Abernathy, or any of the other civil rights gangsters and hustlers who brought this country into the third world. And, that, you know, the liberals, as I say, never recognize their own mistakes, their own failures. They simply pursue them with more fanaticism as these failures accumulate.
Well, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of the second hour, but don't fret, still one more full hour forthcoming during tonight's live installment of the Political Cesspool. Bill Rowland will stick with me as we shift gears and give a fond salute and farewell to Confederate History Month 2010. That is coming up during tonight's third hour, so we ask you to stick with us. Go get a drink, not if you're driving, of course, listening to us on the radio, but if you're at home, get a drink, bag of popcorn, come back. We're going to have fun during the third hour. Rest in peace, Richard Barrett, and we'll be back with more just a few minutes here on the Liberty News Radio Network, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Check us out. I'm James Edwards. He's Bill Rowland. A lot more to come. We're looking forward to it. We hope you're looking forward to it as well.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the ride.